providing unique reporting on markets and companies since 1990. This is the Cortland Economics Report.
All right, welcome back here to continue on with the weekend edition of the KE Report. In the second half of the show, as promised, we're going to be balancing out some of Jesse Felder's comments in the first half of the show with Mark Chandler, managing partner at Bannockburn Global Forex, also editor of the Mark to Market website. Now, in the last couple of segments, we heard, as I said, from Jesse Felder taking a look at the economic data and really his predictions for still that recession and market drop coming in the second half of this year. Now, Mark, I wanted to, at least in this first segment with you, just recap all the news from this week, the news and data that moved markets. We can start with the jobless claims, because in the U.S., the jobless claims came in higher than estimates, 261,000 compared to the estimate of 235,000. This did cause some market volatility. We saw the dollar drop. We saw gold move higher. We saw U.S. markets just continuing to grind higher as they have for the last number of weeks. Mark, let's start with the jobless claims. Is this the start of more weakness in the job market in your eyes?
Yes, I think you're right. I think that the job market is slowing, but I think that this past week's jump, I think it was about 12% jump in initial jobless claims, I think that's a bit of a fluke. Here's why, is two things seem to be distorting them. First, we have the Memorial Day holiday late May, so that's one factor. And the other factor is there's a huge strike going on in the U.S. West Coast ports. This affects something like 22,000 workers. The strike is it's kind of interesting in the sense that these workers have been going without a contract for, I think, the year now. And they've agreed on some issues like how to deal with automation and healthcare issues, but they're stuck on the pay issue. And the union wants 7.5% pay increase, retroactive to when the contract ended. And they want a 7.5% pay increase for every year of the new contract. And so the employers aren't agreeing to this, and so hence the strike. And this is a kind of an interesting thing, because they're going to be a disruptive as far as thinking about the supply chains. And you think about deliveries and the shipping. And what happens is that you'd think that many of the ships would go, they say, okay, we can't get into the West Coast ports. We'll go through the Panama Canal and get into the U.S. Gulf or even the East Coast ports. The problem is that the Panama Canal is too low. And this is requiring ships to empty out, so, you know, to lighten up their loads to go through the Panama Canal. And so this is turning into a bit of a bottleneck. And the net effect of it, one is the supply chain disruptions, which is also inflationary. So bottom line here on the weekly jobless claims, I'd like to see another week or two to smooth out the distortion caused by Memorial Day and also that strike activity. But I do think in the bigger picture, the labor market is slowing, and it's just still very resilient, but it's slowing.
Well, Mark, another theme from this week is really in the U.S. general equity market, some strength, more strength than many were expecting. I saw a lot of calls this week for the bull market is back engaged again in the general markets. There are a lot of optimism from investors. The markets have, especially the indexes, have done incredibly well. And even throughout the week, we actually saw, instead of it just being focused on narrow mega cap tech leadership, that some of the market breadth broadened a little bit. You saw sectors that had been beat up for a while finally get a bid. What do you make of this, I guess, overall optimism in the general equity markets in the week that just passed?
Yeah, so I think that this move up in stocks really, to me, began like middle of March. And I think that it's being driven by really interest rate expectations. So whether the Fed raises rates one more time or not, I think the market feels comfortable that the U.S. is not like a semiconductor chip where we have to measure things in nanometers, like the thickness of or the width of a hair follicle. Instead, I think that the market accepts the idea that 25 basis points one way or the other doesn't make a difference. The Fed's nearly done. And so then we got to begin talking about when to get the first Fed cut. And still, even at this late date, the year-end Fed funds rate, looking at the Fed funds futures market, is still talking about, it's still looking like they're pricing in a 25 basis point cut. So I think that there's this optimism, and I think this is what typically happens, right? You sort of, the markets respond differently to the first hike in a cycle than to the last. And so I think this is interesting, but I'm still concerned though about the market getting a bit ahead of itself. We've already had, when you think about it, we've already had a pretty big rally this year. In my mind, I mean, this is the kind of rally that, you know, that we'd be happy with if for the full year. I mean, we're talking about the NASDAQ up 26, almost 27%, the S&P 500 up almost 12%. And so this is what we've done in the first half of the year. And I think most of us would be happy if we were told this on Christmas, last Christmas, that the stock market would be up like it is in the first half of the year. We'd be all happy with this for the whole year. So I am concerned we're getting a bit ahead of itself. The economy is going to weaken, and it's going to really pose a challenge for earnings growth.
Yeah, those year-to-date numbers are strong, but just go back to the start of Q4 too, and well, the numbers get even bigger. The S&P is up about 20% from the bottom it put in last year. But you know what? There are a lot of people saying this is just a rally in a broader bear market. Yes, it's taken back about half of the losses that the markets experienced for almost that 1 year period last year. But now we've also seen sentiment switch a little bit towards more bullish. We see that when markets go up, people chase markets, they get sucked in. Do you care at all about some of these sentiment indicators that have now moved bullish?
Yes, I think that, you know, it's hard to, you know, people come up with these numbers of what a bear market is, what a bull market is. And with the S&P 20% off its lows, I think that brings in money, partly because of that FOMO, right? The fear of missing out. And I think that's what helps keeps us chasing the market. And remember, a lot of Americans are putting money in every paycheck through their 401ks. It's almost a form of dollar cost averaging into the stock market. And I agree with you too that last year the wipeout forced a lot of people out of the market, and now they sort of have to chase it at higher levels. I am concerned, like I say, it's not just in the U.S. either. We've seen some big rallies. Japan, I think, is near a 30-year high or so. The Nikkei is up over 23% this year. European stocks have rallied. Emerging market stocks have rallied. I think that this is partly the idea that the growth cycle's peaked and interest rate peak will come shortly after that. And then we get the stimulus again to help lift the stock market, lift the economy.
Well, Mark, we mentioned that the dollar had a more muted close to the week than it did. You know, it was still heading higher beginning of the week, and it's kind of softened. Rates have still held up pretty well, though. What's your take on how the dollar, the greenback, and how the interest rates are responding to all this economic news over the last week or so?
Yeah, so, you know, I think we talked about this before. You know, for me, I pay attention to what officials say, and not all Fed officials are equal. I give extra weight to the Fed's leadership. That would be Powell as the chair. The New York Fed President Williams is a permanent member of the vote. He permanently votes. He's the vice chair of the FOMC itself. And then recently, Jefferson is a governor, but he's been nominated for a vice chair. And all three of them, the people I say are the Fed's leadership, they pushed back against ideas of a Fed rate hike next week. The market had about a 70% chance priced in. Now it's about a 30% chance. And with that, you've seen the two-year U.S. yield firm up to the upper end of its recent range near 460. And I think that helps account for some of the dollar's recovery against the yen, finishing the week just, you know, a bit below 139.5. But I kind of thought that this week's the interesting development was that both the Bank of Canada and the Reserve Bank of Australia surprised the market. The RBA, for the second month in a row, they surprised the market. And the Aussies finishing the week above 67 cents. For the most part, we've been in a 66 to 68 cent range. We broke out to the downside and come right back now into that middle of that range. And I think that the market, you know, nobody wants to be bitten by the same dog twice or three times in Australia's case. And so the market's pricing in further hikes. And the same kind of thing for Canada. I think most of us did not expect the Bank of Canada to raise rates this week. They did. And the market has to decide whether it's just a one, like an insurance policy, late cycle insurance policy, or is it something more significant? And the market's sort of voting, at least initially, that something more significant. They're pricing in another hike and the risk of even another hike after that in Q4. So the market's gone from looking for, say, two cuts from the Bank of Canada to now looking for two more hikes in the second half of the year. The dollar, dollar Canada fell well below 134, and the key level now is 133. It held sort of very marginally, got down to just below 133.15 today, which is sort of testing that lower end of the range. And I think that that's the challenge for market participants, especially short-term participants, should we play for the breakout, or do you play that the range holds? And I think that we're better served on this kind of thing now to assume that the range holds. Partly, I think that we saw this with Canada's jobless data, unemployment data earlier today, weaker than expected. And I think that we should expect, you know, the Canadian economy was the fastest growing in the G7 in Q1. And I think we should expect some weaker economic data, especially in the next couple of months. We get the May and June data, which, as you know, those wildfires are going to curb economic activity.
So, Mark, isn't it the story that we're in for a lot of markets and sectors is this range-bound trade? I know we're talking about U.S. markets breaking to 52-week highs, but quite frankly, they're still kind of in a bigger picture range right in the middle of it. Seems like every market is in this range as we are seeing central banks pause. Yes, we did get a couple rate hikes this week, but broadly, everyone's expecting a pause. Is that just what we're in for here? Is markets that maybe are just a bit more range bound, buy the lows, sell any of the highs, or when you get close to any breakouts?
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, I think it all depends on and this way, I think a lot of investors, their challenge is to be true to their time frame. You know, if you're, you know, as a trading proprietary at banks and my own personal account, I know what happens. You buy something, you think, okay, this is just going to be a short-term news event, and it works against a news event or something, you know, short-term trade, it works against you. You begin putting into your long-term bucket. And I think it's better to just stay true to the time frame. And so what could be a trend for, say, people who trade for, you know, at a month view at a time, you know, what could be a trend in 1 month could be really for the longer term, 6 months or a year, could really just be in that range. So I think it all depends on one's time frame. But I am concerned that, you know, the markets do tend to exaggerate in both directions. What I'm seeing, like in the currencies too, an interesting one here is the Mexican peso. The dollar fell to new 7-year lows against the Mexican peso this week. And when we saw it fall to new lows, there would be follow through selling. But now what we're getting is getting a bounce back, like the market's getting nervous. And as we make new highs for the peso, new lows for the U.S. dollar, profit taking sets in because everybody, their sister, seem to be long some of these trades. And I think that that's sort of still playing for stronger levels, but taking profits quickly when the dollar hits new lows. So my guess is we're going to go towards 700 on that peso, which we haven't seen since 2015. But as we go there, people are going to be quick to take profits along the way.
Well, Mark, we've talked about a lot of the global currencies and we've talked about bonds. What about kind of an uncurrency, gold? It's been, speaking of range-bound trading, stuck in a range kind of between 2000 and the mid-1900s, not able to break down or break out. What's your outlook on the yellow metal?
Yeah, so for me, because I don't really trade gold, I watch it. I find that it's really you tell me which way the dollars go, U.S. dollars going and U.S. interest rates, I have a good idea which way gold is. You know, gold made its record high back in May. Like you say, we did come down. We spent a little bit of time, both in late May and here in early June, a little bit of time below the 1950. I sort of like it, an idea that the part I like gold because I think that the dollar is going to get weaker and U.S. interest rates are going to fall. I think the U.S. interest rate adjustment's nearly over. But for me, we have to really get above the high we saw earlier this month, around 1983 or so. And we get above there, and I think we can target back at that old high, 2063. That faces the cash market.
All right, Mark, let's look ahead to next week, because look, next week, there is a lot of stuff coming out. U.S. economic data. We also have three major central banks meeting, the Fed, ECB, and the Bank of Japan. We also have some things going on in the treasury market that we should talk about. So let's start with central banks for next week. The Fed, ECB, Bank of Japan. A lot of people are predicting a pause. Do you think that happens out of the Fed? Any surprises that you think could happen?
Yeah, so the Fed's going to be an interesting meeting. Partly the Fed is also going to provide new forecasts, a new summary of economic projections. So I think that Like I was saying, I think a lot of us were looking for a rate hike, and this pushback from the Fed's leadership. Now I think people are talking about a pause. I think that some people are trying to phrase it as a skip, and a skip only makes sense. You know, you skip June to raise rates in July, but if you know you're going to raise rates in July, what's the point of skipping? And so I don't think the Fed's going to talk like that. I think the Fed's going to, I think Powell's going to be clear that all that decided was that at this week's meeting, you know, he's going to say that we decided to pause, and he's going to underscore that doesn't mean that the Fed is done. It's not necessarily mission accomplished. It's just a pause. And I think he's going to drive home that as a hawkish pause by a couple of things. One is that the forecasts are likely to revise up GDP and likely to revise down the unemployment rate. So that'll help drive home the point that the Fed still sees the economy as being resilient. And secondly, I don't play up this differences of opinion at the Fed, despite by measures of that we come accustomed to thinking about diversity and inclusion. This is one of the most diverse Federal Reserves. Yet Powell has done an amazing job keeping everybody out of the same, like singing out of the same prayer book, so to speak. But this time, I think that there could be a dissent if the Fed pauses. There's been several presidents, a couple of governors, but I would look more for a dissent from a president, a regional president, in favor of a rate hike. And so the takeaway is going to be a hawkish hold, and the market's got about an 80% chance of a July hike priced in. So I think that's really the story with the Fed. But, you know, the morning the Fed meets, we're going to get the CPI number. And the CPI, you know, it's not like rocket scientist stuff here. But what happened is last May and June, U.S. CPI rose by 0.9 in May, 1.2% in June. Those numbers will drop out of the 12-month comparison and be replaced by something much lower. And so I could see how CPI fall from, say, 4.9% to almost 4% when we get the print next week. And before the Fed meets in July, they meet at the end of July. But before they meet at the end of July, they're going to get the June CPI. And that 1.2% drops off, be replaced by something like 0.3 or so. And so what that means is that when the Fed meets at the end of July, you're going to see a weaker economy likely and inflation, headline CPI, say between, say, 3.2, 3.3, something like that kind of area, below 3.5%. So that tells me it's going to be hard for the Federal Reserve if they do pause next week, like everybody thinks now. It's going to be hard. It might be harder to resume the hikes, given that macroeconomic backdrop, lower inflation, less business activity, partly thanks to the tightening of financial conditions, either from the supply, treasury supply, the banks slowing down lending, and of course, you know, the Fed is still engaged in quantitative tightening.
Well, Mark, to that point, you know, as we look back to last year, everything was about inflation. And the part of the panic from, you know, the financial markets was that inflation kept going higher and higher, especially when you looked at year over year adjustments. When you look at this year, inflation has been trending down most of this year, and it seems like it's not nearly as it's still important to the Fed and other central banks, but it's not nearly as topical as things like the labor markets. And are they really strong? And are we heading into a recession in the second half of the year? All we heard about really since the second half of last year was that, hey, get ready for the last part of 2023. It's going to be a lot of economic contraction. So what data do you think would be most pertinent for investors to pay attention to? Is it the labor markets? Is it manufacturing? Is it retail? What do you think is the most important thing to keep our eyes on as we start the second half of this year in just a month?
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, because central banks and policymakers, they often say, you know, we're data dependent. But there's tons of different data, and sometimes they're not all pointing the same direction. So what data? Well, I think that given that inflation is going to be easing, and what's interesting that's going to happen, of course, is that the index that the Fed uses to figure out shelter costs will begin picking up the falling prices. They use a lagged indicator there. But I'll tell you, I still think that the U.S. economy is driven primarily by the consumer. And so, and that's what concerns me is going to happen is consumption seems to be fairly robust here in Q2. And I look for that to pull back. And that's part of the story, too, that I don't think fully is appreciated is that this is not only monetary tightening of financial conditions, but towards the end of the summer, we're going to begin getting the other cost to lifting the debt ceiling. And that is two things to note. One is cut back in spending. They have begun the new fiscal year. But also, starting in September, something like 43 million Americans will begin having to service their student loans. Average student loan out there is about average student loan payment, monthly payment is about $350. So I'm looking at a fiscal drag coming as well. So the key then really is a consumer. How is the consumer going to draw more into savings? The job market provides income. The income is one like fuel for consumption. And so is the wealth effect, rising stock market. Perhaps we get stabilization in housing prices. But ultimately, I think the best thing to keep an eye on is a consumer. The U.S. consumer still drives the GDP, 60 or 70% of it.
So, Mark, regarding the treasury market and that raising of the debt ceiling, a lot more treasuries are going to come to the market next week. And a lot of people are saying, A, where are the buyers going to come from? And B, doesn't that mean that rates are going to go higher? What do you think about this?
Yeah, so you're right. There's sort of like as the Treasury Department was trying to deal with the looming debt ceiling and using these extraordinary measures to work around it, sort of they had to hold back on supply. And this week, we've seen about $300 billion in T-bills being sold, cash management bills as well. And the market seemed to absorb that fairly well. The U.S. two-year note yield is up this week a little bit. We're talking about 5 or so basis points. Next week is even bigger supply, partly because we get the quarterly refunding as well. So if this week the U.S. raised about $300 billion, next week it's going to be closer to $400 billion. So far it's been absorbed fairly well. Say that in this week's auctions, only the four-week T-bill auction didn't show sequentially higher bid cover and a higher participation from the indirect bidders. The thing to watch here to see how much of a tightening like impulse is to watch the reverse repo operation. The Fed announces this every day, and this is a place where funds, banks can park money and get paid for it overnight. And that has been absorbing, say, as much as like $2 trillion. So if we see those numbers beginning to fall, that is less use of the reverse repo, that would suggest that the Treasury supply is being absorbed by the money that used to be parked in the reverse repo. So I'd be watching that to see the magnitude of the tightening.
Well, Mark, as far as the quantitative tightening and the Fed continuing on with QT, we haven't given that as much airtime, but it is something that could continue to go on even after they pause. How much runway do they have to keep, shoring up their balance sheet in light of the fact that we could start hitting a rocky road in the economy moving forward? And some people are assuming that later in the year, they may have to actually shift back to easing.
Yeah, I this is how I would be thinking about this, is that it's true that the QT drains reserves, tightens liquidity. And it doesn't seem like we haven't had enough experience in how low can reserves go. What's the, like, where's the floor? And that's really what stopped the last round of QT, is they brought reserves down to levels that began being a problem. And so I think this is what we want to watch this time. And I think the first sign that QT is going to wind down, the first thing I'd be looking at, and I mentioned how to see the tightening of financial conditions, is some of that money leave the reverse repo. The Federal Reserve also has a repo facility that's not really used that much right now. If we begin seeing the repo facility being used, that would tell me that we're running low on reserves. And so just on the back of the envelope calculation, I sort of suspect that the QT can continue until maybe September, October, and later this year. It's not clear exactly when, but I think you're right. That's something to be watching for the Fed pauses, but probably stop the QT before they can cut interest rates.
So, Mark, what is your outlook for the second half of this year then? Let's summarize all of this. We talked about data. We talked about what central banks are going to be doing. And we dove into a few markets. Are you in the camp that says a recession is coming in the second half? Are you in the camp that says more of a market correction is coming in the second half, maybe hitting new lows after this last pullback last year? Summarize it for us then, please.
Yeah, economists typically don't admit they're wrong. Many of you, if you talk to economists, they don't admit they're wrong. What they really do is just push out the date of their forecasts. So last year is when I thought we'd have a recession. We did contract in the first two quarters of 2022, but that proved to be like more of like a statistical fluke having to do with trade and inventories. Economy grew strongly in the second half of last year. It looks like it's growing well here in the first half of this year. I think we're at a peak here in Q2 this year. It looks like, say, something around 2, maybe 2.2% GDP here in Q2. I look for a softer economy into next year. So it's almost a reverse image of last year. Last year, first two quarters were weak. Second two quarters were stronger. Here in 2023, first half strong, second half maybe weaker. But to me, the problem is when you're thinking about the stock market and the U.S. economy, I don't know how to do it outside of this context in which I would highlight that next year is a presidential election year. And you can go back and look at how stock markets perform in presidential election years and how the economy does. It's hard to imagine that they would like have a recession without fighting back. So I am cautious about the economy as we enter the second half of the year. And I think that for me, the interest rate adjustment, when the market was pricing in 3 rate cuts, I thought that was excessive. I looked for this rate adjustment for the markets basically to move to the Fed, rather than the Fed to move to the markets. And I thought that the dollar would track that. And now that we've had that interest rate adjustment, I think the dollar is going to be weakening. But I know a lot of smart people out there who still focus on the wide, sort of, that the US still has this relatively large premium that offers against many of the other industrialized countries, and that premium prevents the dollar from falling much.
Okay, Mark, thank you very much for your time. A lot to take in here with all the data, central bank meetings, and market moves that we have seen over these last, well, to this week and heading into next week will be very interesting. But again, we're range bound right now in a lot of markets, and that outlook for the second half of the year continues to be the general slowdown, maybe tough market environment, but at least we should have central banks fully paused. Who knows what that does to investor sentiment and their mentality as well. But hey, Mark, thank you for taking time on this weekend show. Everybody, thanks for tuning in this weekend. And be sure to go back to our website and podcast to listen to all the daily editorials and company updates we recorded throughout the week. Chad and I love hearing from all of you, so please keep the emails coming, and we'll follow up with any of the guests or companies that you would like to see featured on the show. So, Mark, everybody who tuned in, thank you very much for spending some of your weekend with us.
Thank you. Good luck to everybody.